Welcome to Wellness Radio with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher as your host. Her show discusses topics of health, wellness, and spirituality and is about discovering your place in this great universe from your cells to the cosmos. Along with her guest, in casual conversation, she strives to ask the difficult questions that may be holding you back from a vibrant life and shares new ideas that may inspire you to make a change in your life that you only can see in your dreams. And now, here is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Wellness Radio. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here today. Today, we are going to take a little journey into a different topic, a little bit lighter on the scope, as we would say, and just talk about some fictional stories about a wonderful author. It's going to be a series of three. The author is Bill Powers. The books we will be talking about today are The Torch Is Passed, A Hardy Family Story, and The Pharma House, A Hardy Family Story also. And what Bill Powers has done has taken some of his just suspense ideas in how his life has evolved over all of these decades and said, you know, I really want to write some interesting stories. I want to be more creative. It's not about being in the hardness of the world. It's about being a little bit lighter. It's about creating some other timelines and how the family can stick together and how a family is having some really difficult times. And all of these really stories, people say, wow, that sounds cool. I never knew anything would go like that. Or, oh, yeah, I heard a story like that about that family, but no one wants to talk about it. Well, today Bill Powers has some really great stories to share with us. And Bill is a great new fictional writer. He has worked in pharmaceutical research and development for over 26 years, and he also has a PhD in toxicology. You'll find a lot of these little inserts in his books, and I really think that's really great. So, Bill, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Well, thank you for having me, Dr. Jeanette. It's great to be here.
So, Bill, what made you go from a great, you know, as many people would say, successful or a day-to-day grind and turn around and want to write stories?
Yeah, that is a little bit a different twist. I guess I've always had a fictional writer locked up inside of me struggling to get out. I've always loved stories. I grew up in a very small rural farming town in North Carolina. And both of my parents were teachers. My father was actually the principal of the school that I attended. And he gave me free run of the library in his school.
Cool.
He said, if you just take care of the books, put them back where you found them, you can read anything you want, anytime you want. And I did, because there wasn't a lot to do around there. So I just read and read and read. And I've developed a love for stories and a love for words. And that just stayed with me all my life. And even though I was in the sciences, you know, the hard sciences, which are very serious,
right,
that love of stories, fictional stories, always stayed with me. And I've always had these little, I guess I call them mini movies, running inside of my head.
And, you know, I think it's so interesting, as you have said, about the library. We think about a library today, you know, the concept that people are hardly even there anymore. I live in New Orleans, and after Hurricane Katrina, people said to me, oh, go to the library to use their internet. I said, you don't understand. There's no libraries, dude, you know. But, you know, so the concept of being able to have that world open to us, I mean, I myself am 60. You're also older. Mm-hmm. I mean, we think about those times, you know, in the 50s and 60s when that is – what our world was all about. You know, when you wanted to learn something or know something, you had to find a book
exactly
that was in print,
yeah,
you know, and to be able to expand your knowledge. I even think about, you know, I would have to go to the big downtown library if I wanted certain books versus the little neighborhood one that just had, you know, a smattering of certain ideas. And I'm sure you had that same experience.
Yeah. In fact, when I mentioned my dad gave me free run of his library, one of the, I guess, the points in my life that made an impression, my dad got a big promotion to a huge high school, which was good for him. But what I really loved about that was the high school had a ginormous library.
Right.
And again, I had complete run of the library. So on Saturdays, while the other kids were out playing ball, which I did occasionally, but I would just go to the library. I had it all to myself, and I'd just read and read and read.
You know, I think also, too, when people read like that, like you and I have done in the past, you know, and many elders will say, you know, you would sit down with your grandkids and you would tell a story.
Mm-hmm.
You're able to be able to converse in a story frame,
right,
where I think now with the Internet, people aren't able to converse or tell a story. They're really just doing taglines or blurbs, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I know with my own kids, you know, to put them to sleep. I think this was, maybe in the 80s. My daughter and my son would say, I would lay down and, would, you know, put them to sleep, and they'd say, tell me a story, tell me a story.
Right.
And that's
right.
All they wanted to hear. And even if it made no sense, they just wanted to hear.
Yeah. I'm afraid we might be losing some of that, because I guess when we were growing up, if you wanted to learn something, you'd have to read a magazine or read a book and extract the knowledge and comprehend it yourself. Now you just Google the specific question, and that's all you get back. So it's not quite the same.
Yeah, and also, too, when you said about being able to comprehend it, I think also being able to go into the world of possibilities, as we speak on this show a lot. It's about the world of possibilities, or opening up limitless possibilities. You know, everyone will say to you today, you know, with this Google, like you said, you know, in the Internet, you get a direct answer, and you believe that is gospel.
Yes.
You know? And it's not that something that you could say, well, I read in this book this, and I read in this book this, and think that there might be a dissension.
Yeah, there's no context there. It's just, it's all black and white, which the world really doesn't function that way.
Right. Now let's take that another step forward. You and I both have tons of education behind us, and then we say we step out of that, and now we're into this part where we're kind of bringing our education or our knowledge or our stories and what we've experienced and said, this is what it felt like. In other words, we're coloring it.
Right.
We are changing the words of the dogma, and people are hearing it differently. Whereas before, you know, sometimes you shove things down people's throat and you say, this is the way it is. But now we're saying, gosh, you know, this is how it could be, or wouldn't this be exciting if, or gosh, this is a thriller. Watch, let's see what's going to happen.
Right.
And I think that's what you've done with your book.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess I've always had a love of learning new things, and that's one of the things I love about being a thriller writer. Even though it's fiction, you have to learn new worlds and new things so you can make it so at least as realistic as possible. And I've always loved that, just learning about new things. In fact, the favorite part of writing for me is the research. I have to actually make myself stop doing the research and sit down and write.
Yeah. You know, that's really cool. You know, it's funny we say about research and everything, but hey, look at Harry Potter. Where did her research come from?
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
You know, and then we think, you know, but then she's also created her world, and then she does have to abide by her world that she's created. So really what you're doing in your series is you've created a world, and now you're taking us into that world.
Exactly, yeah. And I think that's what most good writers try to do. I saw speaking of Harry Potter, I saw a story map that J.K. Rowling used when she started writing the Harry Potter stories, and it's very, very complicated. And you know, like you say, she created this entirely new and different world, and that world has to have rules, and her characters have to abide by those rules.
Yeah, and it's just so interesting. And I think also, too, people become engrossed in a story, and as you've had many great successes with your books, because people will say, you know what, I can relate, or I can understand, or it's comprehensible in my scope of what I can think or how I can maybe see it. And because you've used so many different, you open the book right up and it's talking about, you know, certain cities. Okay, so you see the city and you say, oh, I've been there before. Ooh, let me hear more. Or, you know, a certain company and you might say, oh, that's cool. Or you might see a certain action and you say, wow, I've seen that before. Let me find out more. And that brings you down a timeline in which you develop it.
Yeah, it does. In fact, because I came from the pharmaceutical industry, a lot of my friends are still in the industry. I guess they don't quite get what I do now, because most people in the pharmaceutical business are very
black and white.
Yes, kind of rigid, and there's yeah, everything's black and white, yes and no.
Right.
And they don't understand the concept of me doing this because it's so different. And a lot of them have said to me, you didn't make this up. This really happened, right? And I said, no, it's fiction. It's a story that I made up inside my head. They just don't get that.
Yeah, and I think it's funny because you know what? In some realms, those things have occurred, and
well,
it's
sure
just that so many people are so afraid to say, oh, well, that is my story. You know, I don't know about that. Or a lot of times, you know, you'll see it 10, 15 years after a really great book is written, people will say, you wrote my story, and they're coming back up with these issues about, what is that, copyright or trademark or whatever, you know, infringements
right.
of whatever
yeah,
that
yeah,
is.
That's true.
Yeah, the legal stuff.
Yeah,
and they come up with it later, and you're going, dude, it came out of my head. I don't know what to tell you, you know.
I know. That's because in the first book, which is set in a pharmaceutical company, some people have asked me the specific thing that happens in the book. Says, did that ever really happen? Did you experience that? And I says, no, I did not. It's not real. I made it up. So you have to understand, just like any other large organization, if you have 100,000 people working in a large organization, I guarantee you they're going to be a small percentage who are doing something they shouldn't be doing. So that's the kind of the concept that I took, and I made up a fictional story around that.
You know, yeah, there's a lot hidden, and a lot of things come up, and I think we can, sometimes you can, look at someone and say, I wonder what she's doing, and that's exactly where your storyline comes from.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Maybe you just say that maybe she's doing this or maybe she's doing that, or I wonder what she does when she goes off on lunch or things like that, and that's how a storyline gets created. And you always think about it as, you know how when you make a statement and then you have 20 little kids and you send that statement, whisper it all the way down, when it gets to the 20th person, it's a fragment of what it really was.
Yeah,
so in essence, what it's really about is you could have said the pharmaceutical industry, just use those words as the first person, and by the time it got to the 20th, that's where you can start your storyline because it's a shade of what it was.
Right, exactly.
Tell us about your first book, The Farmhouse.
Well, The Farmhouse, as I mentioned, is set inside a fictional pharmaceutical company called Marshall Pharmaceutical. And the protagonist is Nicholas Harding. And Nicholas, a little bit, is kind of myself. And I set the story in the pharmaceutical industry because I actually started writing it. I started and finished writing it while I was still working in the business. And in order to create a readable or viable fictional story, you have to make it realistic. To do that, you have to do research. I didn't have time to go out and do a lot of research, so I decided to set my story inside the pharmaceutical world that I knew. So I didn't have to do my research. It was already there inside my head. So I set the story inside the pharmaceutical world, but the story is really about Nicholas and his family. He's a young executive. He's trying to claw his way up the corporate ladder. He also has to raise his daughter. He's a single father. His wife had died about a year ago. So he's trying to raise his daughter, take care of his family, and grow his career. And then he finds himself in the middle of all this conflict at work where a group of people, he doesn't know who, is trying to take over and destroy his company. And he's being set up as the fall guy, and that's what he has to deal with. That's what the story's about.
And also, too, don't you think that when you're, as you said, in that world and you draw from that world, you can also say, this is what my reality is that I'm experiencing, and, man, I would really love to see it play out this way. Or
yeah.
I'd love to see it play out that way. And, oh, wouldn't it be so exciting if it ended up this way? And then you kind of, almost when you go into work, you find yourself, okay, I got to keep myself based over here because here's where I am today.
Right.
You know? And when I go home, I'll write about my other ways that I would wish it might be.
Right, right.
Yeah, and but I think that's interesting to be able to do that.
Right. And part of the story is about, Nicholas is just a regular guy, a regular person.
Right.
And sometimes I'll read a story and the protagonist is just so one-dimensional and so goody-goody that they're not really believable. I think that everyone has a good side and also a dark side.
Right.
And the question is, if you're a regular person, what does it take to push you over to that dark side? What are you willing to do to protect the people that you love? Your daughter, your brother, your sister, your family. Okay. And that's what I try to incorporate in some of my stories.
And also, too, you look at, are you protecting your family or are you protecting the secrets of that family?
Yes.
You know, in healthcare, you know, every time patients or clients come to me, I'll say, you know, right off the bat, what is the secret you're holding? Mm-hmm. Because that secret is what you're traveling for. That's what you're traveling in this lifetime, is to find the answer to that secret or to see how long you can hide that secret. And then when it gets too hard, you know, and you're hiding behind it so much, that's when people get sick. That's when people die. That's when they're at big jobs, they do things wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, that's when they slip up or end up in places they shouldn't be. And I think probably in your books, that's really a correlation, because how hard can you hide behind that when it finally explodes or diminishes, right?
Right, right. And what are you willing to do to protect that secret and to protect the people around you?
Yeah. And, you know, I think people go to their death with those secrets, don't you think?
I think they do. In fact, I was reading something. I forgot. It was a famous writer who lived in the 19th century. And they found some of the letters, his correspondence with his mistress. Mm-hmm. And he had explicitly told her to burn the letters. And he burned his that he had received from her, but she didn't burn hers. So hers were found. And I think before, you know, years and years ago, there was probably a lot of that. People corresponded, mm-hmm. they corresponded secrets, and they agreed, we're going to destroy these so no one will ever know. So there's a lot, there's so many things that happened in the past, so much history that's just gone because the people involved decided they didn't want anyone to know.
Yeah, and I think also, too, we're not keeping those things anymore in history, because we say, oh, we write emails or we put texts and we put it on the Internet, but it isn't really legibly in your hand. It isn't there for history to mark.
Right.
I think sometimes when we say, oh, here's an e-book, and I say, no, give me something on paper, you know?
Yeah.
And the concept of putting something down and having it there is so that in itself is actually making your mark on the world versus putting it out there in the ether, you know?
Right. If it's just electrons, well, you're not really putting it out there. It's not the same thing.
And, you know, it's kind of sad in a way. You know, I live in the Deep South. I live in New Orleans. And in our area, they, you know, weren't even teaching cursive anymore in school. And it's like, are you kidding me? And they're like, well, why do we need it? It's called your signature.
That's so sad. I mean, it's getting to the point where if you want to write something in code, you can just write it in cursive because no one will be able to read it.
Yeah, and, you know, more and more people are just, you know, drawing the line. And, you know, I've even many times spoken with some nurses and stuff, and they would say they just put an X. They don't know how to write.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just a tough place to be. And I think when you write a story like you've done in book form, in paper form, it's really putting it out there, and it's sort of created a system of the story so that you can come back to it. You'll have the third book. You know, it's, you'll be able to follow it through. It's something that's created there. It's
it'll
great.
Be there.
Yeah.
Like, I'm one of those weird people who actually writes their stories in longhand. For whatever reason, when I was working in the pharmaceutical business, you know, I had to write a lot of technical documents. And I created those on a computer. I had no problem with that. But I find that when I write creatively, I can do that better if I write longhand.
You know, I used to do that too, but you know what I found out is that my writing, I guess too much writing, it started to slur, so then I was like not even forming the letters anymore. So I went back and I read it and I said, I don't know what I meant here.
Yeah.
So I went to the computer and even so, there's times when I'm sure you probably had this happen. You write a page and you come back maybe a week or two later and you say, where did that page come from? Was that reference or was that mine that I wrote?
Yeah, I don't get it, but...
Yeah,
it's a fun process creating different characters in different worlds. And what happens with me in terms of my characters? Someone asked me, "Well, do you think your characters are real?" So, well, obviously, I know they're not real. I made them up in my mind. However, I have relationships with my characters. I find it hard to go to sleep at night, so I'll sit up at 11, 12 o'clock at night, and my characters will, and I will just play and create stories and create different worlds. And I just find that very enjoyable.
That's so interesting. And it's actually like having your own little world, isn't it?
It is.
And I think that that's something great because, you know, many times, too, I think people come to me and they'll speak about trauma or they'll speak about hard things in their life, and they will say, but this is the darkness of it. And I'll say, yes. You know, write the darkness. And people are so dang afraid of being vulnerable in this world that they keep creating that illusion of it instead of letting their darkness flow. You know, we see all these wellness gurus, and I'm an expert in this, and I can make you be this, and I can cure you and heal you, and you know, come underneath my white light in my hand, you know, that kind of idea. And I'll go, gosh, but you know what? What would happen if there was a darkness expert?
Yeah.
Wow. You know, how opening that would be. It would be, you know, because then you would be at a relatable force in the first place. And then you can expand and go forth. You know, like your stories, you know, you are opening up and saying some of those things that maybe people might not want to vocalize, might not want to say that is an option or a possibility. And they will say, oh, I don't want to go down that road. I'm really scared about it. And that's where you get your suspense thriller, you know. They'll say, but let's see where she goes. Let's see how it plays out in her life, you know.
And I guess things that people are reluctant to think about on their own, they can pick up a thriller like this, and they can read about the darkness, and they feel more comfortable because it's confined to the pages of the book.
Yeah, because I think it's relatable, too. You know what I mean? When we can speak about those things that really hurt us or shake us or connect us to others is also what you find in the book. And, you know, even in the, you know, The Torch Is Passed, that book, you know, when they said about, you know, hey, they came in and they just shot up the car and, you know, they were shooting two people. We see shooting every day in New Orleans, you know, duh.
Yeah.
But, you know, then people will say, well, I'd like to see where that goes. Are they survivors of it? Do they pull themselves out of it? You know, who came to help them, just as your story is all about, a family story? Who came to support them? How did they support them?
Right.
You know, and people then are able to say, okay, I need to seek out supporters. I need to have, you know, someone help me, or what might that look like?
Yeah. Or how am I going to deal with this? Because I think a lot of people in real life find themselves in positions like that where bad things are going on around them, and they just don't know how to deal with it.
Yeah. And it'll take them to their knees, you know, or they're afraid of it, you know. And I think when a story is elaborate and able to say, oh, this is really cool, you know, and it'll be okay, that's the best part of it.
Yeah.
Or also when things really bad happen, then when the daughter gets, you know, hurt, you know. So, yeah, it didn't go all perfect hunky-dory, you know, and everything was great in the beginning.
Right.
You know?
And I guess there I was trying to make the Torch Is Passed as a continuation of the Harding family.
Yeah.
But it was kind of a reverse, a metaphor, because in the first story, Nicholas is the protector of the family. He used to take care of his daughter, Andrea. And in this story, Andrea's older now, but the story starts off, and Nicholas and his brother have been hurt, and she has to step into the role of being the protector of the family.
Right. Wow, and that's really a great idea, too, because, you know, a lot of people say, what do I have to do as a family member in protecting the family, you know? And I think we see that in society a lot of times, too. I think we've lost a lot of it now that the world, I always say, worst thing ever was airplanes and internet, because it took the people out of their areas, you know, in the weekend, or you wouldn't see all the women coming over to talk or to bring a dish and sit, you know?
Yeah,
there's not any neighbors anymore, you know? And then when grandmother needs something, it's like, well, I guess we'll have to bring her across country and put her in a nursing home here because I'm too busy.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And to see protection from within the family is really something that a lot of people don't have anymore.
No, that family structure has changed. And I think that the internet and social media there's benefit there, but I think that they tend to bring out a kind of a dark, nasty side in a lot of people because they can hide behind a wall of invisibility on social media, on Facebook or Twitter or what else. And they can say and do all kinds of horrible things to other people that they may not even know that well, and they stay hidden. And I don't think that's healthy.
Yeah, and I think they can also create an illusion for yourself, too, that isn't really the truth. So then you end up having to be able to uphold that part of which you're not, you know?
Right, right. It's almost like it's not a real world. You may have, 500, 600 friends on Facebook, but they're not really your friends.
Right. You know, it's funny. I went through Facebook, I think it was at least twice this year, and I said, you know, if you're still seeing this, you're probably my friend because I did a major cut this week or whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm of the theory that when you're posting stuff and I see it on my timeline, but I'm posting something like that and I'll say check in if you're still a friend or whatever and you don't,
right.
Then I'm not interested in you reading your stuff. If you're not interested here, see you later. So I think I went from all these friends down to maybe 30.
Yeah.
I just keep chucking them off. It's like I don't need numbers, you know. So I think a lot of people you say that, you know, but I need it because other people reflect on that, or I need that so that I could feel bigger, more important. And
yeah.
I think, you know, in your story, you know, do you need to feel bigger and important, and how do you protect that shell around you?
Right, right. Yeah, things have definitely changed.
Yeah, it's for the things that we do. Also in your story, you always talk about a lot of the history, too. You use, you know, the stories about different cities and different types of professions, you know, when you talk about the different oil and fracking and the cities. Tell us a little bit about how that intertwined and just briefly, why you put that in there and how it plays.
Sure. Well, I am a lover of history. I always have been. I read a lot. And I read a lot of fiction, but I also read a lot of history. I read biographies, the mid to late 19th century, the early 20th century. I find those areas fascinating. And I find that if I pick up a good book on history, to me it's just as interesting as a fictional novel, except that the people in it are real, the things that happened actually did happen. So I've always loved history, and I still read a lot of it. So I decided I'd include a little bit of it, just little tidbits of it, in my stories. In the farmhouse, I included a little bit about the Civil War. In the Torch's Past, one of the subplots involves a company that J.D. Rockefeller set up, I think, in around 1890. And some of what I say is true about J.D. Rockefeller and his company and the subsidiaries of his companies and where they are, those parts are true. But the part about some of the other parts, I actually played off the truth and I made up something. And it's interesting, a couple of people have come to me after they've read the book. They know that I include historical tidbits in my stories. And they want to know exactly what part was real and what part did you make up, because they couldn't tell.
Right.
And I thought that was interesting. But I just love history and including things like that.
You know, I think it's interesting when you say about reading biographies and stuff, because when you read that, it's almost like you're reading that story, but then you're saying, I'm your friend, and this is my story in relation to you. Or this is how it might have played out if I was your mother, or this is how it would play out if I was your sister,
right.
You know? And then you could take that into a timeline, so I can really see how you can incorporate history into a story,
mm-hmm.
You know, just by taking that different part and saying, let's have a dance. And I think that's what you're doing. You're dancing with history.
Exactly. In fact, I just finished an interesting book. Most people will probably find it boring, but it's called The Never Wars. And it's a story, it's a historical story. It's nonfiction. In the 20th century, the United States military had war plans for half a dozen different countries around the world, for going to war against Mexico, for going to war against Canada, for going to war against Great Britain, against Germany, against Japan, against China and Australia. And these are very detailed, complicated plans of what we would do, what they might do, what would happen if the United States was invaded by Germany, that was the greatest fear in the early part of the 20th century. And I find these just fascinating, and they could be the basis of a fictional story as well.
Yeah, that's really cool because, like you said, you take little pieces of it. How about your profession? You know, you talk about toxicology and stuff, you know, in the pharmaceutical. How you fit, you know, that little pieces in. You know, I know for myself, you know, being in the dental profession or in the natural profession, we could say, you know, almost, oh, yes, he ate an arnica plant and the plant was distilled in whatever. So that's how I would bring some of mine into the story. And I think you've done that, too, along your books, correct?
Yeah, I did it on a couple of ways. One, the details of the goings-on within the pharmaceutical business, which is actually a rather small business in terms of number of people involved. Most people don't really understand what goes on inside a pharmaceutical company, so you get to see a little peek behind the curtain.
Mm-hmm.
And also in terms of toxicology, which is the study of poison, what someone can do if they decide to poison someone in such a way that you don't want that poison to be discovered, or things you can do with different compounds, different toxic compounds. So I decided to include a little bit of that also.
You know, I think it's funny we talk about toxicology. You know, it drives me absolutely bananas about the internet with herbs and plants, and people will read a phrase and then they'll take it so much further. Like, oh, this plant is good for this. And then they'll take the plant when they didn't read down that only the leaves or only the buds or maybe only the root was the part that you should be using, but yet they read on the first sentence, this plant is good for, you know, and they end up hurting, you know, whatever. It's going down the wrong road, you know. And I think sometimes we have to step back and say, where does science, where does truth and reality come in? And how can we keep ourselves going? Because as you said, you've done research too, and also with your profession, you know, how do you keep that line where you might not always want to believe the reality, and you'd like to divert out and say, well, I want to create something else, like I said, the flower, you know, this flower is good for this, but really have to say, let me go back and really pay attention. So kind of keeping yourself, you know, on the straight and narrow sometimes.
Right.
In other words, we can get so far out in the ethers, you know?
Is that
your reality, you know?
Yeah, there's so much misinformation out there also. So if you Google a particular plant or a particular drug and just read the first couple of articles that you find, well, maybe some of that information is wrong. And so you're going to go off based on incorrect information. And I know a lot of people also, when they're prescribed a medication, they'll immediately Google that medication, and they're going to find a whole list of horrible side effects, but they don't understand that the way drugs are developed, most of those side effects are completely meaningless, but they have to be listed because of the rules and regulations. But they start developing all kinds of symptoms because they read all this information that they don't understand, and they haven't put it into context.
You know, it's definitely an interesting world because also, too, even if you look at pharmaceuticals, you know, the side effects they create are sometimes that exactly what they're treating, you know.
Yeah.
We all know that, and we also know that everybody's doing the best they can, and I think that's really what the best, most important information now is. Everybody's doing the best they can in this world because the world is changing so fast.
Yeah.
Education, knowledge, our brains, our minds, you know, are just... things are just at exponential speed, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I've been reading up lately on artificial intelligence and where we see that going in the next, I don't know, 10, 15 years. Things like autonomous cars, you know, the Tesla car that can drive itself, and all the big car makers. And the projection is that within 5 to 10 years, that's going to be reality. And that, for example, here in the United States, truck drivers are going to be out of jobs. And I read that in Australia, some of the major mining companies no longer have truck drivers. The trucks are driven by computers. So that's the world we're moving into. And I think it's going to change so quickly, I think we may have some difficulties adopting to that change.
Yeah, and I think there's an actual subset of the population where they're just saying, I can't adjust anymore, and it's time to check out. And you know, and I think we're quite seeing that quite often right now, where people are checking out because of the escalation of alcohol, drug use, even experimental drugs, whatever that might be, or, you know, all of these street drugs. People are just saying, I'm checking out, you know, I'm going to go get drunk for a week, you know, see you later,
yeah.
You know, and we see this quite often because sometimes the world does move so fast. And, you know, even like your books, you know, these things are happening and people will say, but that's not my reality. You're going too fast. Can you slow down?
Yeah, unfortunately, it's not going to slow down. If anything, it's going to speed up. And it's not just people who may not have as much education. I know PhDs and MDs who, when it comes to technology, they are just horrible. They can't figure out how to use the systems on their computer. They're falling behind.
Yeah. And that's absolutely the truth. I'll tell you, you know what I've even said to my, you know, I mean, for all of my degrees and, you know, my kids, the same thing, you know, we'll say, this is my wheelhouse. Don't ask me how to go out and figure out how to buy a car. Just put that thing there.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I don't want to know another, in other words, my silo is, and just as yours is our silos are so jam-packed with what we need to know and what we're able to, you know that we just can't fit another learning curve silo in.
Yeah, I find the same thing, that, you know, I can only deal with so much information on so many different topics, and the rest
right.
I either have to ignore or just rely on someone else to do it for me.
Absolutely, and I think that time of diversity is really coming, where those things just, you know, are going to have to go away. You know, I think if we look over the decades even, you know, and we say, well, people that were really rich, they would have maids. And we would think that that would be something that was probably part of their money and their status.
Mm-hmm.
But in reality, maybe it was, hey, maybe that guy who was rich, he just couldn't even function to be able to think about bothering to clean his house because he was out there creating something else.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know,
and that's tough to
be able to resonate in your heads. But I'll tell you, you know, I know some very smart people, but, you know, if you ask them to cook, forget it. It's never going to happen.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I hear about people who want to have it all, and they'll
mm-hmm.
say that, well, certain men who are executives in industry, they have it all. Well, I know guys that I used to work with who barely knew their children. I know this one guy I work with, he literally scheduled, this was back when he had paper schedules,
mm-hmm.
he literally scheduled in his weekly calendar 15 minutes every couple of days to spend with his children.
Yeah.
I don't think that's heavy at all.
Yeah, and you don't even know what the quote word all is, because if we're supposed to be such spiritual, intellectuals, diverse people, you know, body, mind, and spirit, and everything's got to be in balance. I'll tell you, I hate that word balance. I really want to kick that to the curb, because a balance to me is like, oh, I've got my fingers in all the pot and I'm going through the lollipops, you know. It's
yeah.
like, sure. I really think of life, as a teeter-totter. It's always up and down, up and down, you
mm-hmm.
know.
Yeah, and you have to make choices in what you want to participate in.
Yeah, and I think you do that in your stories too, is that the people are going through the story and they're kind of, you know, who can help me with this, you know, and then they go to the expert for that, and then
right.
they go to the next phase, and then there's some more other support there. So really when you talk about, you know, the Harding family story, it's really about how you maneuver your way through those paths and how you get the support and what your challenges might be and how can you overcome them or get through them. I think that's really what you've unfolded in these two books.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what I'm going for. And I'm actually working on the third book now, and the working title is called The Lost Codicil. And I don't want to give away too much, but if you read the second book, Nicholas is just in a mess in terms of personally where he is in his life because of things that have happened in the second book. And he just needs his friend, Don Marshall, comes to him, and again, from a historical perspective, he tells Nicholas, you know, when Teddy Roosevelt faced great adversity in his life, he always went off on a great adventure. When his wife died, he went off to the Dakota Badlands. When he left the White House, he went to an African safari. When he lost the election in 1912, he went on a South American Amazon River cruise. He says, you need a great adventure. And so the two of them go off on this adventure, and they just stumble into a hornet's nest of lost history that they find that no one else knew about. And so that's the story of the lost codicil.
And don't you think also, too, when you take those adventures, when you've come out of them, out of a great challenge, let's say people, they go through cancer and then they come out and they say, you know, I think I'm going to go do my bucket list this week, you know, or when they quit a job that they've done maybe for decades and they say, you know, I'm just going to go sit this one out and I'm going to go take care of babies, you know, or, you know, I'm going to rescue cats out of all the city or whatever, you know, because I really think, just as you and I have just said about the silo, is it our silo? Sometimes I don't even say it explodes, I say it implodes, because when it implodes, all of that stuff just doesn't matter anymore, and then you have to build a new silo.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I'm doing now with my second career as a writer. When I left the pharmaceutical business, I decided I'm going to close that door. I'm going to open another door, the door of being a writer. And I don't know what's behind that door. It could be really good. It could be horrible. But I'm going to walk through it, and that's going to be the next stage of my life.
Cool. Yeah, and also, too, don't you think that it takes it brings us to a path of ease where there's not so much resistance. In other words, before it always felt like you had to create to be.
Yeah.
But now you're in the place where I can be, and therefore I will create, which is totally opposite of each other.
Yeah, yeah. I'm doing this for myself because this is what I want to do. And a lot of things throughout my life and throughout my career I did because I had to do it for someone else, or I had to do it because of other demands. This is something I'm doing for myself.
Yeah, and I think so many times people are so afraid to jump on that bandwagon because of that fear has such a big, you know, what I call a steel trap door.
Mm-hmm.
They feel like that if they walk through it, it'll slam shut and they can never get back there, you know.
Right.
And, you know, that whole story of, you know, do I jump into the abyss with 1 foot or fingernails, you know? Because it really, they want to be able to have a safety net. And the safety net is sometimes that which always holds you back. Even, you know, when we say people, let's look at people when they say, well, we're gonna separate before we divorce. It's your safety net, dude.
Yeah.
Either do it or don't do it, you know?
Yep. If you're going to do it, do it.
Yeah, and it's about trusting yourself. And I think also you also do have a lineage of trust and being able to believe and also be able to say all is going to be okay throughout your books. And I really think that's important, too, because a lot of people lose trust, and they don't know what trust looks like.
Yeah, that's true.
And then they start second-judging themselves or questioning themselves, and they don't base things on their intuition. They base things upon that which their beliefs of the past might have been.
Right, right. And the stories, I guess the message is, just the family, and the message that the family has is we're going to survive and we're going to do whatever we have to survive.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Bill, I think this is a great time. I love talking about these books. You'll have to come back when your other book comes out.
Okay, I'd love to.
Absolutely. Can you share with the listeners again about the names of the two books, where they can be purchased, and also if you have a website so they can find out more information, that'd be great.
Sure. The first book is The Farmhouse, A Harding Family Story. And the second book is The Torch is Passed, A Harding Family Story. And my website is authorbillpowers.com, AUTHORBILLPOWERS.com. The book could be found there, or it can also be found on Amazon, on Barnes & Noble, and on Apple iBooks.
Gosh, it was really great to talk to you. I think these books are really great. If anyone's looking for, you know, people say, oh, I'm looking for a summer series, you know, hey, this is a great look.
Yep.
But I would also say to you, it is a light read. What I really enjoyed about the book is that it wasn't so text dense.
Yes, that's what
you know? I'm an older person, and I'll tell you, when I sometimes I will look at a book, I'll pick it up, and if I open it up and I can't even make out some of the words. Sometimes I'll just close it and go on. But I think yours flows. It has a really great flow to it.
Good.
So once you get involved in it, if you're reading it at nighttime and people say it's in print, oh, I don't know, it will flow. You will be able to get through it. You will be able to move through it. And once you start with it, it just, it's a page turner. I mean, you really can stay involved in it. I really think they were great, wonderful books.
Good. Thank you so much.
So if you'd like to find out more information about Bill Powers, please check on the bottom of today's show page, and the link is directly to his website talking about the two books he has already published, The Farmhouse, A Harding Family Story, The Torch is Passed, which is the second in the series, and we'll be awaiting the third in his series. Bill, thank you so much for joining us today. It was a real pleasure to have you.
Okay, you're welcome. It was great being here.
Thank you. If you'd like to find out more information, check out Bill's website and also send a few comments on the bottom of today's show page. Great to hear about it. And I think these are really great books, light read, and just look around and say, what is my possibilities in my life? It doesn't have to be so hard and firm every day. And sometimes say, you know, I am just really stressed. I have too much going on in my life. I just want to be able to dream. And these are great books to be able to take you there. Thank you so much for joining us today. It's a real pleasure, and have a great day.
Today we discussed many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family. Clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit drjeanettegallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.